Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help you focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. Welcome back as we continue with our relaxed summer schedule this season. It's good to have you back, and we're coming to you from deep within the boiler room here at the McBurney compound. Glad to have you aboard. Had a dog attack. Have we been on the air since we had the dog attack? I don't think we have. One killed, one wounded, one missing in action. And we got to meet one of our neighbors from over the hill who we hadn't met yet. Got to meet her as she came and pulled her dogs off our chickens. And peafowl, as a matter of fact. The MIA was the peafowl, but she was later discovered. Thing about peafowl is you just can't get rid of them. Once you got them, they're yours. You got them for life. I do not recommend them, but one killed, one wounded, one missing in action who was recovered. Other than that, what's going on in the world? Anything exciting? He said to his extremely attractive audio engineer. No. Tim Tebow may be called upon to save Major League Baseball from the millennials. They're just not interested, it seems like. They're just not interested really in much of anything. Hold on a second here. The millennials, not only are they neglecting Major League Baseball, it doesn't seem like they're having kids all that much. Did you know that August 12th coming up is National Middle Child Day? It's National Middle Child Day. Now, it's honoring the middle children. If you have three or four or five, there's always one or two. Well, technically, there could be three in the middle if you had five. But the article here is from USA Today. They're talking mostly about parents who have three children, which is becoming fairly rare. Apparently, back in the 70s, about a third of all women of childbearing age had three kids, and they had one in the middle. Now it's down below 12%. 12% of U.S. women in their early 40s, late 30s, have four or more children. And very few have three or more. Anyway, birth rates are declining. Last year, had the fewest babies in 30 years were born. Fewest babies in 30 years born in the United States. And they get into the cost of raising. Anyway, they say that middle children could go extinct because people just want to have two now. Just two. That's people think that's a good fit. So they say it costs about $250,000 to raise a child. Does that seem accurate? That seems a little high to me. I wonder if that's counting college. Anyway, it says couples who do have three children fit into a rare category of wealth. More money equals greater possibility of a middle child. And we do have a middle child. Oh, and that's when they get into millennials who are inclined to delay childbirth. They're calling the millennials, millennials and Generation Z in this particular article from USA Today. I'm not sure what the proper nomenclature is. But either way, they don't seem all that interested in much of anything, especially Major League Baseball. Hence, Tim Tebow may be called up to the majors to try to save it. We'll see how that goes. Somebody needs to try to help save the millennials, for crying out loud, from themselves, apparently. They look bored is what it is. And I know there's always been, you know, going all the way back to Blackboard Jungle and Rebel Without a Cause, there was always that bored look of, you know, the too cool for school type. Anyway, but there was only a few of those. Everybody else at least tried to behave in a normal fashion. Now, normal seems to be the bored, aloof, somewhat medicated look amongst the millennials. Yeah, that's... But, you know, we wish the best for them. And I don't know if any of our kids qualify as millennials. I think millennials were born between 85 and 05. So I guess all of our kids qualify as millennials, as a matter of fact. So we'll try to save them from the bored, medicated look. And you people out there, do the same with your kids and your grandkids. Probably your grandkids at this point, right? All right, speaking of millennials, or at least the millennial, we go to the decline and fall file where a woman is about to make history. Now, whenever you read the headline that a woman is about to make history, you can bet that she's going to do something that's manly. She's going to do something that normally a man would do. But in this case, that is not the case. Well, it depends on how you want to read it. For the first time, a tranny will compete in the Miss Universe pageant for Spain. That's right. Let's see. This particular tranny is a man who has become something that looks like a woman. Calls himself Angela. The story from The Advocate, which is a homo website / magazine / pile of reeking disgusting queers, talks about another tranny, famous tranny, a trailblazing tranny. They talk about Jenna Talakova was the first tranny to try to get into the Miss Universe pageant on behalf of Canada. And apparently that wasn't so popular back. This was back in 2012, which isn't that long ago. But tranny history moves quickly, that's for sure. Back in 2012, there was a backlash against the then owner of the Miss Universe pageant, one Mr. Donald Trump. He owned the pageant back in 2012, and there was an effort to keep the tranny out. But people sent Donald Trump a petition and GLAAD. Are you familiar with GLAAD? The Gay and Lesbians Against, I forget. They're against something. GLAAD, they sent Donald Trump. Anyway, Donald Trump ended up siding with GLAAD and let the tranny in. She won Miss Congeniality in Canada. And after that, after 2013, Donald Trump allowed all trannies to compete in the Miss Universe pageants. And there you have that. All right, speaking of Donald Trump, did you get to hear the testimony from Peter Strzok? He said to his extremely attractive audio engineer. At which point she said, "How could I miss it? You couldn't turn on the TV. You couldn't turn on the radio." Seeing that smirking Strzok, he looked like he was sitting on something sharp. What was up with that look? What's up with that look? Yeah, now that's an evil, evil-looking guy. But I think the best, I got an email from my other brother, Daryl, who sent me the best exchange of the entire hearing. Okay. And that was, indeed, that was Louie Gohmert. Congressman Louie Gohmert had the audacity to bring up Strzok's adultery right there in public in front of God and everyone. And the whole room freaked out. Could you believe it? I mean, you can criticize a guy for subverting the Constitution, trying to overturn the duly elected president, and the whole list of stuff that Sean Hannity goes through every day. But don't bring up the fact that he cheated on his wife, not in public. That is out of bounds. Laura Ingraham was extremely offended by that, and I wonder why. Why would Laura Ingraham, a good Catholic who has a cross prominently displayed on her low-cut dress there on Fox, why would she be so offended that Strzok got called out for cheating on his wife? She was not happy about that. She's not married, is she? Doesn't she have, she's got a couple of kids, I think, but no husband. Never got married. And not that there's anything wrong with that, except, you know, that the father's missing and all that. Are we allowed to say there's anything wrong with the fact that Laura Ingraham had a couple of kids with no husband? We're not allowed to say that's as bad as bringing up the fact that Strzok cheated on his wife. It's just people start throwing eggs at you. Unbelievable. All right, so there you go. Congratulations to Louie Gohmert for introducing people to the idea that adultery could be embarrassing. I think we had almost lost touch. We'd almost lost sight of the fact that one could be embarrassed in public about adultery. Although, I gotta tell you, Strzok didn't appear to be embarrassed about it. He gritted his teeth, right? And he gave that little smirk. What a guy, tell you what a piece of work that guy is. All right. Is that all we got? Speaking of Donald Trump, the World Cup has ended. Are you excited?
Yes.
So excited that the World Cup is... Oh, and by the way, the World Cup is over, but so is Pride Month, by the way. June is Pride Month for the homosexual lobby. And we're here on behalf of normal people to declare July as National Homos Make Me Sick Month. Because we got so sick of it during the month of June, it'll take us the entire month of July to recover. I still have a queasy feeling in my stomach. So I have a hard time eating certain foods because of what I've seen during Pride Month as they march around on parade, defiling one another in public and all of that. But Pride Month is over. The World Cup is over. And we're all in recovery, I suppose, including Laura Ingraham, who can't get over the fact that Louis Gohmert embarrassed her by bringing up the idea of adultery. Is that it? Laura's uncomfortable with Gohmert reminding everyone that she's a Catholic and a Christian? She'd rather that type of subject matter never come up in public? Well, she hangs the cross right there on her chest. She's as bad as the MyPillow guy. Have you seen the commercial with the MyPillow guy? What's the deal with a collar buttoned all the way up, yet the cross still pops out the top? Please. I mean, you're as bad as a used car salesman with that one. Golly. Anyway, I don't own a MyPillow. I'm sure it's a wonderful product. I'm sure. And I'm sure that he's a humanitarian. Don't get me wrong. All right. What else do we have here? Well, we got the tranny making history. Oh, NATO. Let's talk a little bit about NATO. Should we talk about NATO or should we come back to that? My other stories are going to offend my extremely attractive audio engineer. So let's talk about NATO and Trump's populism in general. Because everybody got their chests all pumped up this week as Donald Trump went over to Europe and told them they needed to pony up their fair share. For NATO and their own national defense, they need to start defending themselves, Mr. Trump said, because we can't afford it. And all the Americans were like, yeah, those Europeans, they're ripping us off. And, you know, there's a certain level of, I guess you'd call it pride that makes us, because we're paying 4% of our GDP and some of the slackers in Europe are paying less than 1%. So there's an issue that strikes us as unfair, right? I had this explained to me by way of the tariffs. So I brought this up with a good trusted advisor of mine. I said, I didn't know there were all these tariffs, and that seems unfair that Germany has a tariff against our wheat, and Japan has a tariff against our beef, and we don't have a tariff against them. We should have a tariff against them. Should be fair. And my good trusted advisor, my pastor, as a matter of fact, he talked me off the ledge. He said, wait a second. Why does it help you for us to put a tariff on Japanese beef? I said, well, that doesn't help me. I don't know that I'd eat Japanese beef, number one. But it just seems like if they're going to tax us, we should tax them. And he said, that's just pride. He said, your pride is showing. He said, it's better for us not to put taxes on all that stuff. It's better for our people to have lower taxes. Japanese people pay higher taxes. Europeans pay higher taxes because their government taxes imports. Who pays that? The German government pay that? Does the Japanese government pay that? No. The average Japanese guy who goes into a restaurant who's paying $150 for a steak, he's the one who's paying the high taxes. It doesn't hurt. In fact, it's better for us to have lower taxes. And we could even take some pride in that because we have a lot of different options. I can eat beef from Nebraska or Kansas or the Central Valley of California or Texas or Colorado. The poor guy in Japan, he's got to eat steak from Japan. Cost him $150 at a decent restaurant. Me, I'm an American. I can buy my steak wherever I want. So anyway, how did I... Oh, this get this just brings us back to NATO and this prideful feeling that the Europeans should pay their fair share. Because here's the thing. I think I'd rather pay more. As an American, I would rather pay more to defend the Europeans from whoever it is they need defending from. Because, well, I don't think I want to encourage the Europeans to build up effective armies, for crying out loud. I mean, they've proven themselves in the past to be unable to resist the urge to slaughter one another and to start world wars. And if all of it costs me is a little bit of money, well, hey, I'm an American. I can go that. Now tell me that riff doesn't make you want to pick up a guitar and learn how to play, right? That was the one that got me. That was one of maybe a half a dozen that got me right there. All right, but we're moving on here into, let's see, where was I? Oh, yes, pride. Pride. Yeah, I'm okay with protecting the Europeans from themselves. I don't mind. I'm an American. I have 3 children, so obviously I can afford to help support some Europeans. All right. Now, let's get to the cave rescue. This all came and went while we were off the air, unfortunately, but the Thai kids stuck in the cave, right? How dramatic is that? Well, apparently it's not as dramatic as it used to be. So I was reminded on the day that the young boys were found in the cave, which is, I think, 2 Mondays ago, After the boys had been presumed dead for several days, they were found, and there was hardly a blip on the screen of the national and global media. And I can't remember if there was a mass shooting at the time. There might have been. There may have been a mass shooting or some other horrible thing that was distracting us at the moment. Oh no, you know what it was? It was the retirement of Anthony Kennedy, the Supreme Court Justice, that had sucked all the air out of the room around the world. As leftists started freaking out, thinking they might have to curtail their abortion practices. That's then, and so we weren't able, the whole world wasn't able to focus on this, the miraculous discovery of 12 boys in a cave who we thought were dead. I thought it was huge. But I'm wondering if maybe in the modern digital media age, if we are beyond the point of ever again being able to have a humanitarian event that unites the whole world's attention. Maybe that can never happen again. Do you remember the little girl who fell down in the well in Texas in the 1980s? Mm-hmm. Everybody remembers that, right? It doesn't matter if you were living in England or Japan or America. The whole world focused. Before the show, I tried to think of her name, and I remembered it was Jessica. I had to look up her last name, but it was Jessica McClure, stuck in the well back in the 1980s. And so the whole world focused on that, but now there's so many sources of media, and we all seem to be focused on, I don't know what it is. We're all focused on ourselves or making a living, or I don't know. I would have thought the whole world would have stopped for at least a day to celebrate the fact that we found these 12 Boys, and then it was tenuous. It was, they could die. They could be in there for 4 months. I heard they could be in there for 4 months, and I said, wait a second. 4 months? Well, that's ridiculous. That's like the people who say that if the grid goes down, we could have no electricity for a year. That's just ridiculous. I mean, come on. We're people. But we're not helpless. At least Americans, we would have electricity within 2 weeks in major population areas. So, I don't know. Anyways, but maybe we're beyond having an event like Jessica McClure in the well, or even the Chilean miners. You remember that one? That was only a few years ago. 2010, the Chilean miners. What has changed between then and now that we barely paid attention to these Thai? Maybe it took too long. Maybe that's it. The rescue took, 48 hours, 72 hours once they got in gear? After that brave Thai Navy SEAL had died, figuring out a pathway in there? But anyway, I don't know. Something has certainly changed, because that should have been much bigger than it was. It should have been more of a humanitarian uniting global event. But I don't know. Maybe it came in the middle of Pride Month, and you're not allowed to interrupt Pride Month with the rescue of normal people, with a normal event. You can't have a normal event in the middle of Pride Month. That would be offensive. That would be cultural appropriation of our pride. All right, speaking of Pride Month, here we go. From the Queering of England file, we have a fist fight, actually, between lesbians and trannies at the Pride March in London. Yep, lesbians led the parade, and they were attacking transgenderism. They held a banner that said, "Trans activism erases lesbians." And then, so the lesbians don't like the trannies. And now they get into some significant detail here. The lesbians don't like the fact that, number one, they say these trannies are taking hormones that cause health problems. Testosterone in biological females increases the chance of developing ovarian cysts. Testosterone in biological females will cause irreversible deepening of the voice. And Get the L Out, which is a lesbian activist group, says that trannies promote the rights of heterosexual males who identify as women. So a few things I can't mention here that they don't like. Coerces lesbians to accept, okay, I can't really say that, and promotes, I can't really talk, well, there's a number of things about trannies that the lesbians don't like, for the same reason I don't like it, because it's really disgusting and gross to think about. But anyway, the lesbians and the trannies came to blows, right there in the middle of the Pride street, the parade there. Mayor Sadiq Khan, the Muslim mayor of London, denounced the violence. And he said, "Pride is about celebrating difference and London's amazing LGBT plus community plus. Is there anyone I missed? I certainly hope not." All right. So you got the Muslim mayor standing up endorsing. All right. Let's move on from that, okay? Because you can only take so much of that. I don't want to make you people sick. You have a hard time eating certain food types. Let's talk about Kavanaugh. You want to talk about the nominee for the Supreme Court? Kavanaugh, I don't know his first name. I know his last name is Kavanaugh. He's a Catholic. He's a family man. He has two children whom he has not killed. He has a wife whom he has not beaten. He is a coach of young boys for basketball and baseball, and as far as we know, he has molested none of them. He has served soup at a soup kitchen, and he hasn't stole any money from that particular charity. And we have not been able to get an answer from him. Now, all these things are confirmed, by the way. He's never beat his wife, never molested any of his baseball, basketball coaching students there. Didn't kill either one of his two children. Him and his wife haven't had a single abortion. No. Now, what we haven't been able to confirm is, does Mr. Kavanaugh believe that all innocent people have a right to life? Now, and I don't think we'll be able to get an answer to that. He's not allowed to answer. These other things he can answer. Have you ever beat your wife? He would say, no, no. Have you and your wife had any abortions? Did you kill any of your kids? No. Oh, what a great American you are. Did you steal any money from the soup kitchen while you were there? He has not. And the Senate might very well ask him, you know, while you were coaching, have you ever been accused of any kind of misconduct with any of the kids? No, he hasn't. But they will not ask him if all innocent people, including people who are as yet to be born, have a right to life. No one is allowed to ask him that question, and he will not be allowed to answer that question. So let me answer that question for him. And then if he doesn't like it, he could sue me and he could come on and answer it himself. Mr. Kavanaugh, David or Skip or Biff or whatever his name is, I don't know his first name. He does not believe that all innocent people have a right to life. He does not. And because of that, all this other good stuff about him, the fact that he never had any abortions, he never beat his wife, he's never molested anybody in the bathroom at the basketball game, he never stole any money from the soup kitchen, none of that stuff matters. Doesn't make him a decent guy. You can't be a decent human being unless you're willing to state publicly that all innocent people have a right to life, even if it's going to cost you your job. Did you get that, Mr. Kavanaugh? Brett, that's his name, Brett. Brett, did you get that? If you don't have the courage to stand up and say that all innocent people, including the unborn child, have a right to life, because it might cost you your gig, then you are not a decent person. You're a coward. And I don't have time for you, Mr. Kavanaugh. And I don't have time for those who would shill for you, Mr. Kavanaugh. I don't have time for their strategery to try to trick the Democrats into putting a Republican on the court who will overturn Roe versus Wade. That's what we're trying to do, McBurney. Shut up. Don't ruin our plan to trick the Democrats. All right. So, Mr. Kavanaugh, we don't have time for him. Let's see. I don't know that we have. Now we have to go. Okay. So I'm going to go to an article that will not offend my extremely attractive audio engineer, who herself has been desperately waiting for Pride Month to end, as we all have. We've been on the edge of our seat, waiting with bated breath for July to arrive. All right. Starbucks has banned plastic straws. That's right, because they're green and they want to be friendly to the environment. Starbucks has gone strawless. We have a report here from Reason magazine that I will link to so that Reason can be the beneficiary of my hundreds of billions of listeners so that they'll all link to this Reason story, and it will appear that Reason magazine has a lot of people who check out their articles. So I will link to this. They say that Starbucks now has what they call a nitro lid. It's a combination straw and lid together. Now, number one, the Reason points out that this new nitro lid is actually made of more plastic than the company's previous lid straw combination. So they're actually using more plastic. But a Starbucks spokesperson responded saying that we're actually just trying to reduce the number of straws and non-recyclable plastics. The nitro lids are recyclable, sir, said the Starbucks spokesperson. We're speaking for the spokesperson. So they're saying that, the new ones are recyclable and the old ones weren't. But then Reason points out that there's a number of disabled people who say they can't use this stupid thing. So it's as bad as the lesbians beating up the trannies and vice versa. Now you've got the disabled going after the green maniacs. They'll be rolling around in the street. You'll have a green on the ground and a wheelchair will be spinning over them, and they'll be demanding a return to disabled friendly straws. When I get to lose it all, security run through the wall. Stop and fall. song that pops into my mind when I think about Pride Month. As a matter of fact. Although, as far as we know, that was Howard Jones, right?
Yeah.
Staunch heterosexual, right? Married with a bunch of kids.
I don't know bunch of kids. He's married to
okay.
the same person.
He's been married to the same woman for a long time, but back in the 80s, you had to have that voice. If you wanted to make it in the new wave scene, you had to have that voice. So I call it the
voice.
That voice. That was ubiquitous. From everything from The Cure to Howard Jones to the Men Without Hats to the Flock of Seagulls to the You Spin Me Right Round, Right Round, Baby, Right Round,
that
like a record, baby.
A
that guy.
Pride Month guy.
That's a Pride Month. Well, yeah, no more pride there. He's passed on. Yeah, a victim of the AIDS epidemic, from what I understand. The AIDS epidemic came in and swept him off. He was just standing there minding his own business, corrupting a generation of young European boys, and he was swept off by the AIDS epidemic. It was a tragedy, similar to the Freddie Mercury tragedy. Minding his own business in the back of a bar in San Francisco, swept away by the AIDS epidemic. All right, now, speaking of being swept away, the un-climate change secretary, yes, there is one, Patricia Espinosa, is the executive secretary of un-climate change. And that's not to be taken in the negative. It's the United Nations climate change secretary. She's the secretary of it. It's weird. Her title is executive secretary of UN climate change, as if she's in charge of it. Belching greenhouse gases out. I don't know. She was speaking recently at the Vatican, as you can well imagine. Mark my words and the words of my pastor, 100 years from now, global warming will be blamed on the Catholic Church. Just like the whole flat earth thing. Anyway, just mark my words, evolution too, it'll be the Catholics. Everyone will say, boy, the Catholic, the church came along and because most Catholics I know, they think global warming, man-made global warming that threatens to destroy the earth is a bit of an overreaction. But the Pope, well, he's freaked out about it, at least publicly. Anyway, Patricia Espinosa, Secretary of Unclimate Change, she's pointing out she was speaking at the Vatican, so she brought up Noah's Ark, at which point the Pope and all the bishops snickered because they thought she was bringing up a mythical story from a book that they've rarely read. But she said, I want to start by discussing the story of the great flood that took place long ago. Humankind had warning that rising waters were coming, but those warnings were ignored. Now, she says, I don't propose the building of a physical ark, but it's hard to ignore the parallels between now with George Soros and Bernie Sanders warning us of the rising waters and the United Nations. They're all warning us that rising waters are coming. Do you see the parallels, Mr. Francis? Wink, wink, nod, nod. Anyway, she said the world's response to climate change, quote, raises larger questions about who we are, why we're here, and where we are collectively going, unquote. That's, oddly enough, Ms. Espinosa, Secretary of Unclimate Change, those are the very questions that the story of Noah's Ark helped us answer 3 or 4 generations ago. But no longer. Don't lose appreciation for the fact that Ms. Espinosa happens to ask the great questions of all people on the planet. Who are we? Why are we here? Where are we going? Those are the big three. Well, in the past, your great-great-grandmother and grandfather, they had the Bible with stories of Noah's Ark that helped them answer those questions. But now, no longer, no, Ms. Espinosa says, climate change is about morality. And what do we need? Do we need the warning of Noah? Do we need to teach people about the Bible and God and to be good stewards of the environment and the animals and all of that? No, she calls for, quote, a globally centralized planning structure. That replaces Noah's Ark. It replaces the Bible. It replaces everything. For over at the Unclimate Change office there at the United Nations, for Ms. Espinosa, and probably for 95% of the people present at the meeting in the Vatican. They'd be much more comfortable with a globally centralized planning structure than discussing the true story of Noah's Ark. All right, so we'll leave them aside. I don't want to get into suicide yet. Instead, let's talk about Alan Dershowitz. When considering suicide, think of Alan Dershowitz. Because you're not doing that bad, are you? Really? Come on, cheer up. All right, Dershowitz says he's being treated more unkindly now than he was in some of his most notorious evil acts on behalf of the lowest and worst examples of humanity on the planet. He defended Klaus von Bülow. Do you remember Klaus von Bülow? He killed his wife, and I can't remember if Dershowitz got him off. Seems to me von Bülow didn't get away with it. Despite Dershowitz's best efforts, I don't remember exactly, but I know Klaus von Bülow was one of the worst examples of a human being ever. Dershowitz also defended Leona Helmsley, who, if I remember correctly, she treated the help very poorly. She was a very rich woman, and she treated the maids badly. And I think she stole a lot of money, and I'm not sure exactly what she did. Horrible, detestable human being Leona Helmsley was. Michael Milken. Do you remember Michael Milken? Now, I happen to disagree with the fact that Michael Milken, he probably was not the greatest guy in the world. But universally declared one of the worst human beings on the face of the planet in light of the SNL scandal of the 1980s. Alan Dershowitz was right there defending him. Who else did Dershowitz defend? Mike Tyson. After he raped the girl in the hotel room, who was there to defend him? Alan Dershowitz. That's right. And Alan Dershowitz, well, he had, I'm sure at the time when he defended all these lowlifes, that he had incidents where people would question his moral turpitude. It's like, Alan, how can you do this? He was probably confronted by at least one of his grandchildren, who were like, Alan, aren't you afraid of going to hell? My goodness, man, what are you doing? Mike Tyson? And then, of course, there's the pièce de résistance. Since the French won the World Cup, I'm throwing a little bit of French. The pièce de résistance was his defense of O.J. Simpson. His defense, that's right, he defended O.J. Simpson after O.J. had cut those two people's heads off. And anyway, Dershowitz says he's being treated worse now for defending Donald Trump than he was ever treated when he defended all these lowlifes, murderers, thieves, liars, and rapists. He says it's worse now. Well, here's the thing, Alan. You deserve it. You smug, lying bastard. You deserve it. If I met you at a dinner party in the late 1990s, you would not have finished your meal until I was physically removed from the room. So I'm glad your life is miserable. I hope it gets more and more miserable until you find yourself perhaps considering humbling yourself before the living God and begging him for forgiveness for the massive amount of destruction you have inflicted upon society, Mr. Dershowitz. And if you want to sue me, go ahead. Go ahead and sue me, Mr. Dershowitz. I would love to cross-examine you on all of these topics. It'd be good publicity, too. Take the show to the next level. We could do a reality show with Alan Dershowitz suing us. It'd be fantastic. All right. What do we have here? Okay, we go to the justice file. Do I want to do this one first or this one? Here, let's do this one first. Well, here, let's start with the criminals, and then we're going to go to the cops. I remember at one point in my career, we used to drive around the streets of California, of an undisclosed California city, at 4 o'clock in the morning. And everybody knew that at 4 o'clock in the morning, there was no one on the streets except cops and criminals. That's it. So anyway, let's go to the criminals first. Telby Fields, a 24-year-old lady out there in Kentucky. She was in court last week. She was charged with third-degree terroristic threatening. Third-degree terroristic threatening is what she was charged with. While she was waiting for the judge to appear, she started asking people around her if they wanted to buy any methamphetamine from her. This is in court while she was waiting for the judge. So she was overheard by courtroom officials who reported her to the sheriff, and the sheriff followed Ms. Fields out of the courthouse, which begs the question, why is she leaving the courthouse? If she's already been charged with terroristic threats, and now she's trying to sell meth in the courthouse, why is she leaving? Well, it's because nobody has any respect for the idea of justice. And she came into court with no fear of the criminal justice system. And she left court with no fear of the criminal justice system. And then the story goes on, but that's the point I wanted to make. To have the audacity to try to sell methamphetamine from the third row in court while you're awaiting the judge. No fear. No fear of God, no fear of justice. Considers the justice system something of a joke and a game. Does Ms. Telby Fields out there in Kentucky. But let's go to Georgia now. We go from the cops to the criminals. Two cops are, well, they're in trouble because they got caught on their body cam flipping a coin to decide whether or not to arrest a speeding driver. That's right. They caught a young lady speeding, driving fast on a wet road. The cop, Courtney, and her partner discuss if they will arrest the speeder, and they say they open up a coin-flipping app. Now, there's a commentary on society right there. Instead of actually flipping a coin, they opened a coin-flipping app on their phone. Just stop me right there, okay? Anyway, A, arrest is heads, R, release is tails. The officer was heard saying on the body cam, now listen to this, the virtual coin and the coin flipping app landed on tails. But the officers decided to arrest the young lady anyway. So this is messed up six different ways to Sunday, this story. Number one, the cops are viewing their job to enforce criminal justice as a game, flipping a coin. That's disrespectful. They should both be fired and probably horsewhipped just for that. Number two, they arrest this lady for driving too fast on a wet road. You shouldn't arrest people for driving too fast. That's ridiculous. Number three, they couldn't even find a coin. They had to use a coin-flipping app. So they should be horse-whipped and they should be drummed out of the service of their local police department. So, and by the way, this we went from the criminal with no fear of God to the cops with no fear of God. So where do we go from there, folks? Nowhere but the Russian front. there. We are rounding third and headed for home. We thank you for joining us this week. And we're going to go a little bit deeper into the... This is the Justice Delayed File. Justice Delayed File. Japan has executed the former Doomsday cult leader in the sarin gas attack on the Tokyo subway. Now, I'll have to remind you people, since I know some of you who are listening weren't even alive when the sarin gas attack on the Tokyo subways occurred in 1995. 1995, I said. 13 people were killed by this nut job. They say he had a mixture of Buddhist and Hindu meditation, along with some apocalyptic teachings. And they launched simultaneous sarin gas attacks on the subway March 1995, killing 13 people and injuring almost 6,000 people. And here we are 23 years later, a generation later, and the Japanese government finally executes this guy and how many? The leader and six others were executed, and there's a number of others that are still awaiting execution, believe it or not. So while we are obviously somewhat satisfied that the killers have been executed, a generation of young people don't even remember the attack, blunting the deterrent effect that the execution could have had had they been executed circa April 1995, after a swift trial, obviously. All right. Now, speaking of a swift trial and execution, let's go to Santa Barbara, where the UC Santa Barbara, a website published by UC Santa Barbara, states that children from ages of four, from the age of four, should engage in what they call sexual play. The site emphasizes that parents should embrace their children's consensual sexual activity with other children, and that reacting negatively to such behavior could teach them to associate sexual activity with feelings of guilt. And the children could carry this guilt with them into adulthood, which could negatively impact their sexual lives. At which point, UC Santa Barbara should have been stormed, and whoever published the site should have been arrested, and then tried, and upon conviction, executed. Thank you very much. So this is, that's University of California at Santa Barbara. What else? I don't want to do this story. That. Oh, here we go. Let's go to Anchorage, where our northern affiliate there sent us the story that landed in the Decline and Fall file. The Anchorage Equal Rights Commission has filed a complaint against the Downtown Hope Center, which is a women's shelter. Now, why would an Equal Rights Commission file a complaint against a women's shelter? On its face, that seems like a typo, like somebody got the story wrong. Well, they say that the Downtown Hope Center, which is a women's shelter, that's in the title, a women's shelter, has violated the equal rights of transgendered people when they would not allow Timothy Coyle, who came intoxicated one night, disguised as Samantha Coyle. He was identifying that night as Samantha, and he wanted to sleep there with all these women who've been beaten up and whatever else has happened to them. These are traumatized women. They're in a women's shelter. And Timothy comes up. He's drunk. He says he's Samantha. He wants a place to sleep. But the must-read Alaska reporter here says that Timothy Coyle is a biological male, which that right there may violate the ordinance under which the Anchorage Equal Rights Commission has filed a complaint against the Downtown Hope Center. This reporter himself could be in jail by now if the folks at the Equal Rights Commission have read this article. How dare you call anyone a biological male? He's misgendered this person. Well, Mr. Coyle was inebriated. Now listen to this. The women's shelter gave this drunken pervert cab fare to go to the emergency room to tend to the injuries he had sustained in a fight that he/she, that's what the reporter writes, that he/she had been in at the Brother Francis shelter, where he apparently had been asked to leave. Despite the fact that he's a biological male, Turns out he's a drunken moron and an idiot and a maniac and a threat to society, so that even the men's shelter told him to get out. But this is embarrassing that, number one, that Anchorage has an equal rights commission. That's embarrassing for everyone from Anchorage, or really from the whole state of Alaska. What else? Well, that's it for that story. We appreciate that from our northern affiliate up there. Let's see here. No, I don't want to do that. That's really, this is a lot of depressing stories, I'll tell you. Here, let's do something a little upbeat so that we're not all depressed. Let's talk about mitochondrial transplant. Now, this will blow your mind. A series of experiments, according to WRAL.com, a series of experiments has found that fresh mitochondria can revive flagging cells and enable them to quickly recover. In animal studies at Boston's Children's Hospital and elsewhere, mitochondrial transplants revived heart muscle that was stunned from a heart attack but not yet dead, and even revived injured lungs and kidneys. Infusions of mitochondria also prolonged the time that organs could be stored before they were used in transplants, and even ameliorated brain damage that had occurred soon after a stroke. Are you people familiar with what the mitochondria is? Well, it's too complicated to get into here. But imagine this. It's so small that you can't even see it, and it's so complicated that you can't even understand it. How about that? And these researchers were working with pigs, and the researchers took a plug of abdominal muscle the size of a pencil eraser. They spun it in a centrifuge, added some enzymes to separate the proteins, and isolated only the mitochondria. And from this plug of muscle the size of a pencil eraser, they recover between 10 and 30 billion, with a B, mitochondria. They injected 1 billion directly into the injured heart cells. And to the surprise of the researchers, the mitochondria moved like magnets to the proper places in the cells and began supplying energy to the cells, and the pig's heart in the experiment recovered from the damage that was inflicted. Pretty incredible. Now, how does that happen that the mitochondria know where to go? Oh, it's all evolution, right? It's natural selection. The mitochondria just magically, naturally selected themselves right into the right perfect spot. The mitochondria, by the way, contains the ATP synthase, which builds adenosine triphosphate right there in the mitochondria. It's the smallest observed machine in nature, the ATP synthase. Anyway, look it up, and then come back to me with your Darwinian fantasy. Get out of here with that. I was out with another sales rep, and he was there to hear my pitch, and I gave my pitch. And I'll tell you, I have worked into my pitch oblique references to creationism, that if one is paying attention, one can either be inspired or offended, depending on where you're coming from. Anyway, at dinner that night, after a couple of drinks, he brings up to the boss right there that he's a creationist. He said, you know, Doug, I was listening to your pitch, and more, I'm really convinced that there has to be a creator. And, oh, we went on now for 45 minutes. We had a great conversation about creation and evolution and all that, and the boss was just squirming. Because we're independent, right? He can't fire us, and he's got to buy us dinner at about $100 each. And he got to sit there and listen to the whole thing. It was pretty cool. All right. Now, let's see here. Let's see. No, I don't want to do that. Millennials are lonely. We got a story from CBS. One former Surgeon General has written in the Harvard Business Review that loneliness is a growing health problem, especially amongst Generation Z. Those age 18 to 22, hey, maybe our kids aren't involved in that whole millennial disaster. They're the next one. What would come after Generation Z? Generation AA? I don't know. Anyway, they say that they're lonely. Old people say they're not very lonely. The millennials say they're horribly lonely. And anyway, you know, this is from the Godlessness is a Mental Disorder file. Because this millennial generation is now the third or fourth generation raised completely unmoored from a knowledge of the Bible and God and the fact that they were created and common morality that we all used to accept. And so now they're becoming lonely and miserable, and maybe that's why they look so aloof, disinterested, bored, and medicated. I suppose if you're lonely, you start to medicate, right? I guess so. Anyway, the millennials are lonely, so go out there and grab a millennial. Give them a hug. Tell them that they're wanted and needed if you can think of a reason. Here we go to the decline and fall file. The Generation Z reports that they, let's see. Two-thirds of Generation Z, better known as millennials, identify as, quote, exclusively heterosexual. Two-thirds. So that means a third of them identify otherwise. 71% say they're exclusively heterosexual. Now that's up. That's down. This gets confusing whenever you talk about this subject. Up is down, right is left, backwards is forwards. They say, according to this same survey, 85% of Gen X claim to be exclusively heterosexual. 88% of baby boomers. Now, wait a second. These numbers seem somewhat high. I mean, I'm a Generation Xer, and I can guarantee you there's no 15% of my generation who claim that they'd swing whatever way. No. Maybe 2%. Maybe. And they'd never admit it. So you know what this means? You know what this says to me? That the people who run these surveys, that there's a certain political correctness in the environment since the 1960s probably, that encourages people to identify as at least sympathetic to various sexual perverts like homos and lesbians, trannies and dykes, and other freaks and weirdos, garden variety sodomites. There's a certain level of political correctness that causes people to over-report their tolerance. Now, here at the Weekly Worldview, we proudly declare that we're not tolerant. We are phobic, as a matter of fact, of all of these various isms. But the bottom line here is that the number of people identifying as exclusively heterosexual is down almost 15%, no matter how you look at the numbers, between the Gen X and the millennial generation. And listen to this. This is what I've always said, okay? Among 12 to 15-year-olds, One of the authors of the study, of the report, said there was a hugely greater exposure to communications on the variety of lifestyles available to young people today, which it reinforces my axiom that if you keep talking about this stuff in the open, more and more people are going to try it. So you people should just shut up about it. Shut up about your Pride Month. Don't go out on your Pride March. Stop sticking it in our face and stop sticking it in the face of our kids, because our kids are fragile, and they don't need to be exposed to this kind of perversion. You bunch of creeps and freaks. You make me sick. I'm so glad it's July. National Homos Make Me Sick Month. Maybe I could call it National I'm Sick of Homos Month. Do a little reverse. Among 12 to 15, and by the way, not only are they, the millennials, identifying as just generally sexually confused and deviant, among 12 to 15-year-olds, in a 2017 survey, half felt that the news they see on news websites and apps was either entirely or mostly true, compared to over 80% that thought that way in 2008. So more than half the things they hear, they're not sure are true. So they're losing touch with reality. They're losing touch with the truth. They're losing the ability to identify what is true. And when you start confusing children about their sexuality in their preteen years, what do you expect? By the time they're 15, 16, 17, they're thoroughly confused. And those of you who are lying to them, it would be better for you if you had a millstone tied around your neck and you were cast into the deepest part of the sea than to cause one of these little ones to stumble, which is what you have done. And this survey is just the latest evidence of it. I mean, let's face it, people. Male and female is a bedrock notion of reality. Reality is partly defined as male and female. It's one of the major attributes of reality. And the young people, the secular young people in the public schools, have been robbed of that reality by a bunch of sex perverts who were actually cruising them the whole time. I'm really getting upset about this. So you pull the rug of reality out from under a young child, and you sow the seeds of doubt. Forget about reacting negatively to sexual activity amongst toddlers, like the perverts out at UC Santa Barbara said, don't react. They might be confused and carry this confusion into adulthood. This is the reality right here of what's confusing the kids. You bunch of perverts. All right. So anyway, so we got a generation of lonely, mentally ill children who need to hear from people like you and I. Thank you very much. And so grab a millennial and ask him to listen to the Weekly Worldview this coming week. And that's it for the show. We want to thank you. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, my good friends at AmericanRightToLife.com, and of course my other brother Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview. Now, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.